And tonight we have Joe for our speaker. So welcome, Joe.
Thank you, and it's great to be here again, and thank you for being here. Without you, there's no meeting, and I'm grateful for that. Last week I discussed, I spoke about my experience, my two different experiences that I had in AA. I didn't really get into the book too much, but I did talk about my experience with the big book. After I had started drinking again after almost 10 years. In those 10 years, I didn't have an experience with the big book. I had an experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, and that wasn't enough for me. Just going to meetings and not drinking was not enough. I needed more. I needed more help than that. And that, obviously, the big book was there all the time. There were people that did know the big book. I didn't make an effort to get into that because I did want to do it the easier, softer way, and I was more into the fellowship and the friendship and the sayings and the logos and things like that. And they all have value. They all have just as much value. But without the big book experience and without someone taking me through it, which I didn't know I needed, I thought I was able to handle it on my own or just read it, and I never did read it. But I think I would encourage everyone or anyone new that is new or coming back or doesn't have an experience with the big book to find someone to help you go through it. I believe even if you have a PhD, this is not a book that you can experience or read on your own and really understand it and get it. I think there's a spiritual component between two people sitting down and working with the book and talking about it and talking about their experience from beginning to end. I think that has a tremendous amount of value. So with that said, I'm going to try to focus tonight on the 12 steps as they go through the first 164 pages. Last week I started with the logo, and it was taken out, and after the meeting, I got some real knowledge about it, and it's kind of like an ancient symbol that an aid doesn't get involved in any kind of controversy, and they decided to take it out without moving into any kind of controversy. And the circle and the triangle inside the circle is the AA symbol, and on three sides of the triangle there's three different meanings. It's unity, service, and recovery, and that's all one. It's for me, I was told that the unity and the service without the recovery is not the whole program. The recovery and the service without the unity is not the whole program. And that's mind, body, spirit, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts. And it was explained to me how that would make me, if I focus on that and realize and know that I'm doing all those things, that would give me a whole understanding of who I am and what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. And the next page was the contents. And in the contents, my sponsor laid it out for me this way. From the preface to the forward, if you turn to the contents, it's a V, page 5, Roman numeral 5. If you look at the preface down to the down to the forward to the fourth edition, that's the general information in the book. And then next is the doctor's opinion. That's the start of step one. Bill's story. There is a solution, and more about alcoholism is all step one. We agnostics, step two. how it works, step 3 and 4. Into action is step 5 to 11. And working with others is step 12. That's how it's laid out in the contents. And that's how it's laid out in the book. And it all goes in and out. And also from to the wives, the family afterward, to the employers, and a vision for you. That's all about practicing these principles in our affairs. That helped me a lot at the family, especially the family afterwards. And a lot of work went into those chapters because it was the best way to show the 12 steps in action through the experience of the alcoholics, the first 100 that recovered. And I talked about, you know, recovering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that's when I saw that was in the foreword to the first edition. And if you read at the top of it, it says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book." That's the main purpose of this book. Show us how these first 100 alcoholics recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It doesn't say anything about alcohol in there. And I asked my sponsor why. He says, because we do suffer from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You can cross-reference that in the doctor's opinion. I went over it last week. If you want to hear about that, you can go to the recording on the website. But that was the beginning of my understanding that you know, I operated under this I call it a dangerous misconception that I had nothing in common with my ancestors from 100 years ago, 1935, whatever, 80 years ago, 90 years ago. I had nothing in common with them, and I was dead wrong. You know, the reality was that I had a lot in common with them. I was capable of the same self-destructive behavior, the same vile power struggles, the same alcoholic tendencies, and the same crimes against humanity. Nothing had changed. And when I started working step one, I realized that they were talking about me and that I had better pay attention. And I started to get the information that I needed to help me understand what made me tick and who I was. And when we got through the doctor's opinion and Bill's story, let me go to page 17, where there is a solution. So at the bottom of page 17, we have this is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And before that, I'm going to go to the top of the top of the chapter. The tremendous fact of every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. And that common solution, and I underlined and I highlighted it. And excuse me if I'm reading kind of slow because these are my regular glasses. I was talking to Jill about this. I got to get some. I don't have my reading glasses with me. The reason that I think Alcoholics Anonymous is so successful and has done so much amazing work throughout all these years is because we all have something in common. We all have I hesitate to say disease, but it is, it's like a dis-ease, right? It's kind of like a condition that when we drink or we put anything in our body that alters our mind, we need more. It does something to me and it does something to us that it doesn't do to the average person. And I've gone to church, I've studied with spiritual teachers, yoga, I've tried every other solution other than AA, and they couldn't help me. AA was the only solution for me. And it took me almost 16 years to realize that. And if we go to page now, 25. So we get through, there is a solution, and we start on the solution, and we start talking about the solution, but we don't get to the spiritual experience until page 25. And I didn't really, when people said, oh, you know, this is, step 12 is, you need to get having a spirit, or having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, we carry this message to others. I could say it, I could remember it, I could regurgitate it, but I really didn't know what that meant. Like I said last week, this guy told me in rehab, I raised my hand, and he said, when you get out of here, go to your meeting, go to your first meeting, he goes, raise your hand and ask for a sponsor who had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I didn't go to the meeting, and I didn't do that. And 3 weeks later, I was drinking again. And when I did that, the call was answered. I found my sponsor, and we started going through this book. And if you read at the... You see there's an asterisk there? A lot of times we go through the big book. It's down at the it's like the second paragraph. The great fact is just this. If you could see that. The great fact is just this. And nothing else, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences. And there's an asterisk after that. And I was in a meeting once, and I said, my sponsor showed me that asterisk. And if you go to the bottom of the page, that asterisk says, it says fully explained in Appendix 2, which is on page 567. Now, I've been in meetings. I was in meetings for years. I never knew that. And I talked about it last week. Every time I would come across something like this, I'm like, how could I be in AA for like over 9, 10 years and not know this? Like, how do I not know this? So if we want to go to page 567 now and read about the spiritual experience, it gives us an understanding on what that means and what that looks like. And it's Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening. Sometimes you hear people say, well, sometimes you get it sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Right? Spiritual experience, sometimes quickly. Spiritual awakening, sometimes slowly. We used many times in this book, Spiritual Experiences, Spiritual Awakening, we used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to being, to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, This conclusion is erroneous. When I read that, I started to realize that I didn't need to seek anyone else's God. I didn't need to seek anyone else's higher power. Thanks, Mark. got some glasses. Glasses on top of glasses. Oh, wow. This is like a spiritual awakening. I can see. So when I read this part, so I'll read it again because I got glasses then. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. So what that meant to me is I always heard Bill had this white light experience, and some people I've heard had these experiences when they just all of a sudden saw the sky open up, or they had some kind of, you know, moment that shifted their lives forever, and that wasn't happening to me. I'm like, there must be something wrong with me. You know, I'll never get this. I have no understanding of a higher power or what God is, and I have to get it from somebody else. When I heard this line for the first time, I realized that I'm not alone. And what AA has taught me is that I'm not alone. And that any experience that I may have as an alcoholic and a recovering alcoholic, someone else is experiencing the same thing. And it's possible to seek those people out and find what you have in common with them to help you grow. And if you want to read the rest of the spiritual experiences, it's pretty amazing. I could discuss this for the next 45 minutes, but being that in the interest of time, I'm going to try to get through the book and try to get through the 12 steps. So on page 17, let's see, I'm going to go back and forth here, kind of like I did with my sponsor. I'm going to go to the ABCs, right? It's on page 60. It's right after how it works. The second paragraph down, our description, and we read this sometimes in the meetings, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. So our description of the alcoholic, step one. The chapter to the agnostic, step two. And our personal adventures before and after. Bill's story, doctor's opinion, the forwards, the forming of AA, made clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. You know, and Bill talks about this, and he talks about when we were alcoholic, he says, people tried to help us with like frothy emotional appeal. And I didn't know what that meant. And my sponsor explained this to me. He goes, you told me a story one day. And my wife looked at me and says, can't you look into your daughter's eyes and stop drinking? And I wanted to say yes, but I couldn't. Like, that's the frothy emotional appeal. You know, don't you realize you're going to lose your job? Don't you realize, like, you're killing yourself? And people would come to me with this all the time. Don't you realize you're not gonna be able to take care of your family? Like, all of this frothy emotional appeal couldn't help me. And when I had to realize that, the step one, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, like, there's no frothy emotional appeal in there. I had to accept that. You know, I was alcoholic, and I knew what that looked like because I did go through the step one. It describes me in the doctor's opinion. It describes me in Bill's story. It describes how AA was formed. It describes what we have in common. And all of that was me. And I was like, yes, okay, I could accept that. And that probably no human power could relieve our alcoholism. Step two. You know, we have power greater than ourselves. I go back to that frothy emotional appeal. That was all human power, including mine. Like, what am I going to do? How am I going to get through this? You know, what did I become? How did I get here again? Waking up every morning, like, I used to pray, and my prayer was, God, please don't let me wake up tomorrow so I have to go through this again. And I'd wake up and I'd be like upset that I got to figure out how to find something to drink today so I could be okay, so I don't have to be sick, throw up and shake, maybe deal with people. And that was my life for years. Years felt like months. Months felt like weeks. Weeks felt like days. I remember waking up in my car, and I think it was sometime 2016 or 17, and it was Christmas Day, and it was snowing. It had snowed like early in the morning, and it was Christmas, and I had nothing. I had nobody to go see. I was too ashamed, and embarrassed to even call my wife to ask if I could see the kids. I had no right to do that. And that was me. And you know, this is the human power also that can't help me. So I had to look for that spiritual experience. You know, when I read that, I started understanding that if that spiritual experience can help my ancestors that were plagued and burdened with the same problems that I have, then maybe there's an opportunity for it to help me. And I started to formulate an understanding of a power that was greater than myself. And step three, I mean, this is step one, step two, and A, B, that's A, that's B, and C is that God could and would if he was sought. In the original manuscript, he says he can and will. And if you can't get with these ABCs, throw the book out or start from the beginning. That's how serious Bill was about it. They didn't put it in this book because it kind of made it a little more friendly. But if you didn't get through, if you don't get with the ABCs, and you get to this part, you're not ready to move to step three. Because right after that, it says, being convinced of A, B, and C, step one, two, and three, we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care, over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do?
Battery's running down.
All right.
All right, let's do that.
That's okay. I'll talk louder. So yeah, that was kind of like a turning point for me. Like, what does it mean? You know, turn my life and my will over to the care of God. And I decided that I was going to put my life in God's hands. And metaphorically, you know, I don't mean that literally. You know, I'm not in like the sky daddy. There's no sky daddy out there with his hands out and I'm holding me, carrying me around. So metaphorically, I knew that I had to trust the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to trust the experience of others that have been and done the things that I've done. And been to the places that I've been and have recovered. I had to put trust in an intelligence and a power that was greater than myself. And I decided to do that. And when I decided to do that, I won't say my life got better. I became able to face life again. I became able to face what I had to do that was in front of me. I became able to have gratitude for the little things that I had to do in life. Take care of myself. Responsibility. The small responsibilities that I took for granted. I'm like, this can't be life. Like, this can't be it. This can't be all. But yeah, it's 80% of my life. Because these are the things I need to do to take care of myself. And I was grateful for it. I became grateful for it when I started to put my life in God's hands. After the things that I needed, after the responsibilities that I had no idea what was coming. All I knew was I had to become a productive member of society, whatever that might look like. And what that meant was going to work every day, getting there on time. On time meant 15 minutes early. Doing my job, getting paid for what I was getting paid for, because there were times in my life where if I could slack for an hour and get paid for it, I was doing it. If I could do as little as possible and make as much money as possible, that's what I was doing. I was looking for that. And I was surrounded by people that let me get away with it because that's what they were looking for too. And I was still miserable. It didn't give me any satisfaction. It didn't help me feel better about myself. This wanting to get over all the time. This wanting to be in control all the time of my time and how much money I made and who's going to pay me. So when I put my life in God's hands, I realize that whoever I'm working for is the liaison between me and what really pays me. Between the gifts that I have that I don't know where they came from, the skill that I have that I don't know where it came from, the mind that I have, I don't know where it came from, but I have it. If I can build something, I develop the skill to build it. It took my mind and my body to work together to build it. I didn't do that. So I had to respect this and submit to it, that it wasn't me. But I was a vehicle for something that needed me to pay attention to it. And I started to pay attention to the things that were calling me every day. I tell John this all the time. There's little things that I needed to take care of. They wanted my attention, like the mail that I didn't open was calling for my attention every day. The clothes that I had in the laundry basket was calling for my attention every day. The dust I had to clean off of my laptop, my computer, or my table, it was calling me. I know I needed to do it. And every time I didn't do it, it kept me where I was. And when I did it, I began to increase in who I am and what was started to realize what was important. And I tell my children this today, now that I have a relationship with them. If you see something calling you for your attention, do it. If you do that 100 times, your life will change. I lived it. I experienced it. My life changed because I kept doing the things that were in front of me. This is putting my life, step three. Turning my life and my will over to a care of God as I understand Him. This is what it looks like. Taking care of the things that are asking for my attention. Because I know I need to do it. You know, you can call it procrastination. If you don't do it, you can call it laziness. Whatever you want to call it. When I stopped making an effort. It took a lot of effort not to do these things. And when I stopped making that effort to do these things and realized how important it was, my life started to change. And it wasn't about my surroundings. It wasn't about my circumstance. It was about the goal of being productive and putting my life in God's hands. That was my step three experience. And I started to get ready for step four. And I heard in the rooms that, my first experience, I've been procrastinating with my step four. you know, I don't know how to do it. They say do it like it's in the book, and then there's 10 different ways and 10 different studies on how to go through a step four, write it down, write this down. Everybody's got a different way to do it. My sponsor's like, listen, man. And I'm afraid to look at it, you know, look at myself. My sponsor's like, listen. Lack of power was our dilemma. We didn't have the power to stay sober by ourselves. You had a bona fide step three experience. Whatever it is that you're going to write down in your step four is what's blocking you from your relationship with God, with your higher power, with this intelligence that you talk about all the time, this universal intelligence, whatever label you want to put on it. Because I did. I put my life in God's hands. I turned my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand Him. But that didn't mean I had a relationship. Now it's the next step for me. In order to develop that relationship, I had to get unblocked. And step four was the unblocking process. There was a woman that that went through the step four process in the most beautiful way. She was about a month ago. I think her name was Susan. She was here. And it was like she focused on that. And I'm sure a lot of people got a lot out of it. And I got a lot out of it. And I'm not going to go through that. But what I encourage people to do, including the people that I take through the book, is to do it the way it's laid out in the big book. Start there. Start somewhere. You know, it's always like people ask me, how do you know what to do when you go to work? I'm building something. I am a carpenter. I'm building something. How do you know what to do? I'm like, I don't know what to do. I have the skills. I have the material. I says, the house tells me what to do. The work tells me what to do. It shows up. If I start taking a step, I says, I can take this bolt off. That I could do. I could bring the material to the doorstep. That I can do. I can take the tape measure out and start measuring. That I can do. And if I start doing all the things that I can do, all of a sudden the work starts doing me. I'm not doing that work anymore. I have the next step, the next thing to do. And that's how I approached my step four. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. My sponsor laid it out for me. I was still unclear about it. Because I had heard so many things. But I could write. So I did that. I could remember what I had done. I could remember the people that I had resentments against. So I started doing that. And at first I was like, he's like, yeah, you got it. You probably have a lot. I'm like, and I got mad at him, and I'm not going to say the word I said, but I got no resentments. He's like, what are you talking about? and I realized I had to learn what a resentment was. You know, resentment was something that happened to me years ago that I still relive every day. I'm still thinking about, you know, the kid that stole my bicycle. You know, at 6 years old. It traumatized me. So now I don't trust people. I have a mistrust for humanity. I think about the teacher that was unfair to me. You know, I think about the racial tension I had to deal with growing up. Think about institutions, police, judges, lawyers, DMVs, building inspectors, all these people that had authority, that had authority to tell me what I needed to do when I just wanted to do. Why can't I just do what I wanted to do? I didn't realize what my part in it was. So these things became resentments because I kept reliving them. When every time I had to get an inspection for a job, you know, all of a sudden, before the inspector shows up, I have a resentment. And he can feel that. He knows I'm not comfortable with him being there because he's going to criticize my work. And criticism is something I wasn't comfortable with. But I didn't realize what an opportunity it was. to form a relationship with someone else, ask questions, and get better. Until I started working on my fourth step, this is how I lived. I didn't know they were resentments. But until I started to recognize what a resentment was, until I started to realize how I relived it in every situation, even in traffic, somebody cut me off because I had a car accident 10 years ago. Somebody cuts me off. It's possible that I can get into another car accident. And that's going to take me down a whole nother rabbit hole of insurance companies and getting my car fixed and all money, you know, financial insecurity and all that stuff. I had to become unblocked by these things in order for me to now have a personal and intimate relationship with my Creator. And it's different for me than it is for everybody else. Because all these things that happened to me did not happen to you. Similar, the paradoxically they're similar, but different. And that's what makes it personal. That's what makes my relationship personal with my Creator, higher power, a.k.a. God. So after I got through all this work and realized what I was living with, what I was carrying all my life, my sponsor said, take a look at it. And he said, it's not about you being a bad person. He said, this was the best you can do without God in your life. This was the best you could do without a power greater than yourself. Submitting to that power greater than yourself. That's all it is. Look at all of it. It's the best you could do, man. Because now you know you can do better. Let's move on. Let's move on to step five. There's that hour that I go and you take by myself. And I sit down and I'm thinking about, you know, after I go into my step five with him, which is kind of like a mixture of step four and some stuff that I could remember and you know, what's the most horrible thing I've ever done that I feel guilty about every day. And he's like, man, you know, I know you. You're a free man. You're not in jail. No one's that good at being that bad. So, you know, it's okay to talk about this stuff. And I went through the step four and step five. And it wasn't like I felt, you know, this weight lift off my shoulder. I think people talk about that. And I'm not trying to compare myself to anyone. It's just what I hear, what I've heard, and what I hear in the rooms. I kind of felt like it was the opposite of falling down, you know, because it wasn't dying that I was afraid of. I was killing myself drinking. Right? I didn't want to die, but I didn't want to kill myself. But I was killing myself, so it wasn't dying that I was afraid of. It was living that scared the crap out of me. Didn't know how to do it. So after that, I felt liberated in a way. I felt like I didn't need anybody's approval anymore. And that's what I always looked for, this people-pleasing approval state of mind. You know, I need your approval to tell me how good I am. You know, I needed the inspector's approval. I needed the police approval. I needed the judge's approval. And that kept me living in a world that I couldn't understand, because it wasn't me, it wasn't who I was. This fifth step was the beginning of being a free man, being able to qualify, being able to talk to you like this without feeling like I would be shamed or judged. You didn't do anything. You wouldn't have done anything to me to make me feel that way. I just felt that way. I just felt I walked around like I was being judged, or I had to be ashamed of something. But after that step five process, I didn't feel that way anymore. I didn't need anybody's approval. And I don't mean that in a tough guy way. I was free to be who I am. People always told me to be yourself. I'm like, I don't know how to do that. I'm like, okay. I don't know how to be my. Never knew how to be myself until I got done with the step five process. It was liberating for me. And I thought, like, okay, step six and seven is coming, and that's going to be easy, right? There's no writing, you know. There's no having to talk about personal things. I've conditioned myself, or I've conditioned my subconscious to understand that, you know, my life is in God's hands, and I don't live this perfectly all the time, right? I get angry, but having become awakened to these things doesn't disqualify me from anger or feelings, you know, insecurity and things like that. But I'm aware of them now, right? I can see them. I'm like, okay, that's there. I'm like, I'm developing a resentment on this. What's my part here? You know, how do I qualify, you know, in this particular situation? And that's the power. That's the power of, you know, this work. And step six, we got to step six, and he's like, shortcomings, right? I had to ask God to help me remove my humbly ask Him to remove my shortcomings, and I didn't know what shortcomings meant. Really, I heard it, and you know, I spent a lot of my life like that. I heard a lot of words and heard a lot of things, like typical things, and I was like, I thought I understood what they really meant, but I had no idea what they really meant until I got into a dictionary and looked up the word and see what it pointed to. Because words are just signposts. The word is not the thing. The chainsaw is not the chainsaw. The word chainsaw doesn't chop the tree down. The chainsaw chops the tree down. The word simply points to what that thing or action is. And I had this, had a newfound respect for words. I had to figure out what my shortcomings were. And he's like, well, you're falling short. Falling short of what? He says, falling short of everything you ever wanted to do in your entire life. You fell short as a husband. You fell short as a father. You fell short as an employee. You fell short as an employer. You fell short as a student. No? Am I wrong? I'm like, no, you're not. But I always thought I was okay in these things. I always thought I was a good husband. I always thought I was a good father. I always thought I was a good person. But I had confused self-seeking, selfishness, and all that self-pity stuff for being a good person. Even when we were good, weren't we still trying to get something out of it? And that's on page 61. If you want to go to page 61 and how it works, this is still in step three, but this is how the book was for me. Going back, step six, going back to step three to solidify what we were getting to when it came to step six, because at this point we have done some significant work. What usually happens, this is the second paragraph, and he told me to put my name in this in place of he. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. Joe begins to think life doesn't treat Joe right. Joe decides to exert himself more. Joe becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious. As the case may be, still, the play does not suit Joe. Admitting Joe may be somewhat at fault, Joe is sure that other people are more to blame. Joe becomes angry indigent, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is Joe not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is Joe not a victim of the delusion that we can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if Joe only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things Joe wants? And do not Joe's actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can out of the show? Is Joe not even, at best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And we were at step six, and he took me back here to read this again, and I was like, yes, I fell short on a lot of things. I could have done better. I just didn't know how to do it better. So we were entirely ready to remove all these defects of character, right? So that was step six, and those are my defects of character, like the step four thing, the five, and falling short. You know, step seven, they kind of help each other. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And I started to realize, like, you know, humbly asked this power that I put my life in hands in to remove my defects of character. What does that look like? How do I explain that? Still had this feeling that I was not defective. Right? That my character was not defective. I couldn't really own that. And that's when I had to step up my game. And no matter what happened to me, and I'm not saying bad things like happened, or I was looking for bad things to happen, but no matter what happened in my day, I accepted it. And I turned and I looked for the opportunity. I realized that it was possible to find an opportunity in everything that was happening. That whatever I felt, anger, disappointment, frustration, whatever I felt was a signal for me to look for an opportunity. But it was true that I felt what I felt. But it wasn't true that what I felt was the truth. And that's what I had to get with. That's what I had to find. That's what I had. That's where the opportunity was. Get to the truth. Can I fix this? Can somebody else fix this? Do I need to cover it up so I don't look bad? Like, these are the things that I automatically did. Cover up. You know? But now I own up. Because I don't need that approval anymore. And that was my step six and seven experience. You know? Knowing that, yeah, you know, I do fall short. And it's okay. I don't need to cover that up anymore. The opportunity that's always there is for me to get better, or for me to do it better, or for me to learn something. Or maybe the opportunity might be just for me to apologize and move on. And not carry it with me for the rest of the day, week, month, or year. What has happened has happened. Because if I couldn't accept what has happened, my shortcomings were like ready. Or my character defects were ready to show up. They were like dishonesty, you know, hate, envy, pride. They were just ready to like work. And the only way they could is if I gave them permission to, by not being truthful. So step 9. So now, like, at this point, right, I'm free. I have peace. I have this peace in my life that I never had before. I know I'm done with living in that quiet desperation that I used to live in. I told the last week, I was like, I would go to bed every night, not drinking, but knowing something wasn't feeling right. My drinking, like, turned the volume down on that quiet desperation. Nobody knows, like, what I'm feeling, but I would go outside and put this persona on and wear it all day long, and it became really taxing at the end of the day, and it didn't feel like I did anything of value, or I served, or I did my job properly, and I would live in this quiet desperation. So I go through these steps, these first 8 steps, the first 7 steps, and I'm feeling free from that. For the first time, I sleep like a baby every night. Living in a rooming house with certifiably crazy people, bed bugs, active alcoholics, and drug addicts. I'm at peace. And I'm like, man. The value of knowing who I am started to become more and more important to me. So in step 8, we made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And a lot of that list was produced by a step 4 process. And this is how the steps continue, keep working together. We go back to step 4 now. We went back to step 3 when we were in step 6 and 7. We went back to step 4, even back to step 1. So I'm making a list of these people, and I'm thinking about the list, and like, does this person belong on the list? Does that person belong on the list? And it's like, I'm in charge now. I'm making a list. He's like, man, just make the list. That's it. You know, just write some names down. Make the list, and, you know, we'll deal with it when you make the list. Tell me when you're done. And I don't know when I'm done, right? Because I'm like, there's got to be somebody else that I need to make an amends to. He says, that'll show up when it shows up. He goes, this is not something you do once. You know, your list will grow, or people might be on your list that shouldn't be on your list. He says, you'll develop that. It's kind of like the step 4 process, right? It's kind of like when you start working. You don't know what to do when you get to work. You get I used to get a job, and I'm like, oh my God, I got the job. I really wanted the job. I really wanted the employment to make money. And then I got the job, and I'm like, oh my God, what do I do now? You know, I don't know how to do this job, right? So it's kind of like this step 8, right? Like, I don't know how to do it. What do I do now? I got this list. Just do what's next, just like I did with step 4. Just do what I do with the rest, most of my life. Just do what's next. So step 9 is the first step that puts us out in the world to deal with people. You know, before that, it's what we need to do to deal with ourselves. And he gives me this specific way of making an amends. Can I make an appointment? I know I hurt you in the past. Can we make an appointment on your terms? What does that look like? Where do you want me to meet? Where do you want me? It's all on their terms. It has nothing to do with me. I explain what I say. I explain what I did. Did I leave anything out? You know? Yes, you left this out. You did this, you did that, you did that, you did that. Okay, how can I make this right? This is my step 9, right? Everybody I go to, everybody I deal with, wherever that is, how do I make this right with you? You can't make it right. That's what they want. You got to pay me back. Okay, I have $50 in my pocket. Can I pay you $50 a month? You know, what is it going to take? You know, after a year of doing that, it's like, stop sending me $50. You know, you know. So this is another freeing process. How do I make this right? And now I'm not hiding anymore. I don't have to hide. I don't have to dodge people or hide, you know. And step 10. Step 10 is a part in step 10. It says, you know, our code is love and tolerance. Like, people say they live in 10, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And, you know, I live in all the steps. There's always a going back and coming back, coming and going and coming and going. And sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. We've already had a conscious contact in step 4, step 5, step 6. Now we're working on improving that. And what that looks like for me doesn't look like that for anybody else. But there is improvement. Just like I said, you know, I thought I was a great person, but yeah, there was room for improvement. Always room for improvement. And step 12 is what I'm doing right now and what I do with other alcoholics. And it's, Bill Wilson said, nothing ensures permanent sobriety like working with another alcoholic. And when I'm working with another alcoholic, I'm doing this again. I'm going through this book again. I'm doing this work again. And I'm learning something more about myself. I'm improving my spiritual condition. I'm improving myself. I'm improving my life. And hopefully I'm improving the lives of others. That's all I got for tonight. Thank you.